गोपीचन वल्लभा गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीचन वल्लभा गिरिवरधारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी यमुना तीर वनचारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Kori Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Haridas Thakur ki jai. Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Deving Sarasvatiṃ Vyāsaṃ. Tato jayam mudirayet, nashta prayeshu padreshu, nityam bhagavata sevaya, bhagavat yutama shloke, bhaktir bhavati nayashtiki. So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3. Chapter 2, verses 32 and 33. Ayad,
Jayad. Ayad, Jayad.
Go Sevana. Ayajayad go sevana. Go parajan. Vijotamahi. Go parajan. Vijotamahi. vittasya chorubharasya vittasya chorubharasya chikirshan sadhyayam vibhuhu chikirshan sadhyayam vibhuhu Ayajayad go sevana, Goparajan Vijotamahi, Vitasya Chorubharasya, Chikirshan Sadhyayam Vibhuhu, Ajayayad go sevana. Goparajan Vijotamahi Vitasya Chorubharasya Chikirshan Sadhyayam Vibhuhu
Ayajayad Gosavena
Goparajan Vijotamahi Vitasya Chorubharasya Chikirshan Sadhyayam Vibhuhu
Ayajayad
Gosavena
Goparajan
Vijotamahi Vitasya Chorubharasya Goparajan Vijotamahi Vitasya Chorubharasya Chikirshan Sadhyayam Vibhuhu Ayajayad Gosavena Goparajan Vijotamahi Vitasya Chorubharasya Chikirshan Sadhyayam Vibhuhu Ayajayad Gosavena Goparajan Vijotamahi Vitasya Chorubharasya Chikirshan Sadhyayam Vibhuhu Word meanings Ayajayat
Made to perform
Gosavena
by worship of the cows
Goparajam
the king of the cowherds
Vijayutamahi
by the learned brahmanas
Vitasya
of the wealth
Cha
also
Urubharasya
great opulence
Chikirshan
desiring to act.
Satyayam.
Proper utilization.
Vibhuhu.
The great.
Translation.
The Supreme Lord Krishna desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Maharaj Nanda for worship of the cows, and also he wanted to give a lesson to Indra, the king of heaven. Thus he advised his father to perform worship of Go, or the pasturing land and the cows, with the help of learned brahmanas. Please repeat. The Supreme Lord Krishna, desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Maharaj Nanda,
for worship of the cows.
And also he wanted to give a lesson to Indra,
the king of heaven.
Thus he advised his father
to perform worship of Go,
or the pasturing land and the cows. With the help of learned Brahmanas. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since He is the teacher of everyone, the Lord also taught His father, Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj was a well-to-do landholder and owner of many cows, and, as was the custom, he used to perform yearly worship of Indra, the king of heaven, with great opulence. This worship of demigods by the general populace is also advised in the Vedic literature, just so people can accept the superior power of the Lord. The demigods are servants of the Lord, deputed to look after the management of various activities of universal affairs. Therefore, it is advised in the Vedic scriptures that one should perform yajñas to appease the demigods. But one who is devoted to the Supreme Lord has no need to appease the demigods. Worship of the demigods by common people is an arrangement for acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, but it is not necessary. Such appeasement is generally recommended for material gains only. As we have already discussed in the second canto of this literature, one who admits the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not need to worship the secondary demigods. Sometimes, being worshipped and adored by less intelligent living beings, the demigods become puffed up with power and forget the supremacy of the Lord. This happened when Lord Krishna was present in the universe, and thus the Lord wanted to give a lesson to the king of heaven, Indra. He therefore asked Maharaj Nanda to stop the sacrifice offered to Indra and to use the money properly by performing a ceremony worshipping the cows and the pasturing ground on the hill of Govardhan. By this act, Lord Krishna taught human society, as he had instructed in the Bhagavad Gita also, that one should worship the Supreme Lord by all acts and by their results. That will bring about the desired success. The Vaishyas are specifically advised to give protection to the cows and their pasturing ground or agricultural land instead of squandering their hard-earned money. That will satisfy the Lord. The perfection of one's occupational duty, whether in the sphere of duty to oneself, one's community, or one's nation, is judged by the degree to which the Lord is satisfied. And let's just read the next verse also. Varshatindre vrajakopad Bhagnamane tivi falaha Gotra lila tapatrena Prato Bhadranu Grinnata.
Prato Bhadranu Grinnata.
O sober Vidura, King Indra, his honor having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavana, and thus the inhabitants of Raja, the land of the cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger with his pastime umbrella, the Govardhan Hill. Om Ajnana Timarandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Miditanyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vatankam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vatankcha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrukyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So how auspicious it is that Ananda is here on the day we discuss the worship of the cows by Lord Krishna and this pastime of Govardhan Leela, which is one of the most charming pastimes that all the devotees love to hear. So I hope I may serve you by glorifying Krishna a little bit correctly in line with the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. So I won't tell the pastime in detail. In a couple of weeks we'll be celebrating the Govardhan Puja, and of course we hear about it every year, but we all like to hear how Krishna sweetly talked to Nanda Maharaj. Even though he was a little boy, Nanda Maharaj was preparing this big sacrifice they did every year for Indra to satisfy Indra so that they would have good agricultural production, nice rains, and so forth. But Krishna somehow, because Krishna was always the cynosure of attention of all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and even though he was a little boy, he was able with his sweet words to convince Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men to take the ingredients that they were going to use for that sacrifice and use them to worship the cows and Govardhan Hill and the Brahmins. And so Krishna directed them to feed the cows sumptuously, also to feed the lower animals and to give nice food and money to the Brahmins and to give prasadam to everyone, including all classes of people. And then keeping the cows in front and the women in nice bullock carts, they circumambulated Govardhan Hill. And with great delight, the ceremony was done and the hill grew to a giant size. Actually, Krishna took the form of the hill, but also he remained in the form of a little cowherd boy. And the hill ate all the nice preparations that were prepared, all the wonderful different kinds of foodstuffs. And Krishna also prayed to the hill, which was him. And Indra, being puffed up and thinking that Krishna was some upstart that was stealing his thunder, stealing his proper share of sacrificial offerings, became furious, and he sent this ferocious storm to destroy all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. He called his Samvartaka cloud, which is a cloud that's used when there's need for a total devastation. And he sent the most furious storm with great lightning bolts and rain, very, very strong winds and hail, and you know, just this outrageous storm that was having like pillars of rain coming down, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as they do when they're distressed, even though Krishna is this little boy in their midst that they all love very much, they go to him for relief. And Krishna then, as he does, he protected them effortlessly by picking up this hill with his left hand, this gigantic hill. He picked it up like a giant umbrella, or Srila Prabhupada would say as the frog's umbrella, a mushroom. As easily as a child can pick up a mushroom, Krishna picked up this hill and used it as a giant umbrella, invited all the cowherd men and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan to take their animals and all their possessions and come under the hill, and they would be protected. In fact, there was like a beautiful golden city under the hill where everybody was comfortable for 7 days and nights. They didn't feel any hunger, thirst, they didn't feel sleepy. They just had a delightful festival under the hill while Lord Indra was trying to destroy them with rain and lightning bolts. And Indra then realized he was defeated and became a little more humble, and he called his clouds back. And when the sun rose again after 7 days, Krishna told everybody now everything was safe and they could take their possessions, their belongings and their animals and everything and go back to their homes. And everybody was so much, their love for Krishna, which was already unlimited, was increased, and they offered him different food, including yogurt mixed with the tears of the gopis, and everyone was then astonished by Krishna's amazing pastimes, and they were talking to Nanda Maharaj about it, Nanda Maharaj reminded that, oh, Garga Muni told me that this child comes in different ages, sometimes black, sometimes yellow, sometimes white, and sometimes red, and he's got all these great powers and he's just like Vishnu. Then, feeling completely humbled, Indra went to this place that's there, it's known as Sarabi Kunj. There, if you go to Govardhan Hill and make the parikram, it's near the town of Jatipur, you can see this wonderful Sarabi Kunj, where Indra came along with the Sarabi cow from heaven, and he offered prayers, acknowledging that Krishna was the Supreme Person, asking for forgiveness for having become too puffed up to understand Krishna's actual identity. And Sarabi then also offered prayers, saying on behalf of all the cows who are all Sarabi's descendants. Sarabi said, "You are our Indra, you are our king of the cows," and bathed Krishna in milk. A Sarabi cow can offer unlimited quantities of milk and anything else required. And so bathed Krishna in milk, while Indra also bathed Krishna with Ganges water that sprayed from the trunk of his elephant carrier, Airavata, and all the demigods came and showered flowers, and they also bathed Krishna along with many other Sarabi cows from heaven. And so this is the wonderful pastime of Govardhan Hill that is very dear to the hearts of all devotees. And from this pastime, we learn many things. Krishna does many things at once and teaches many lessons. Of course, he's mainly enjoying himself and pleasing his devotees. But one purpose of Krishna, of course, was to cut down the pride of Indra and to chastise Indra. Indra is a devotee. The demigods are all devotees of Krishna. But when sometimes we have some responsible service to do, we have to take on some authority. Along with that authority may become opulence. We may have dependents. People are praying to us. There's a tendency in the material world, the whole problem of the material world is the tendency to want to become the enjoyer, to want to become the controller, to want to dominate material nature. And Indra was not immune from this tendency, that because of his opulent position, he had become very proud. So we should remember also to become humble and always remember Krishna's supreme position, and that we're just little servants of Krishna. We may have to take on responsibilities for Krishna befitting our position in society and our qualities, that what we're able to do. But we should always do it just as a service to Krishna. Another purpose of the Leela was Krishna wanted to show everyone that Govardhan Hill, in fact, his whole dhamma, his whole abode of Bhoma Vrindavan on earth, is non-different from him. And this was one of the five conclusions that Lord Chaitanya taught, that Krishna is the supreme worshipable personality, that his abode is also non-different and equally worshipable, that the highest method of worship is that of the gopis of Vrindavan, that the highest scriptural authority is the spotless Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, and that the ultimate goal of life is to attain Krishna prema, love of Krishna, like the inhabitants of Vrindavan have. So we can see the way the inhabitants of Vrindavan behaved with Krishna, how they always loved him. And that's another purpose, that Krishna showed the love of the Rijvasis, and he showed his merciful protection, Poshanam. He nourishes and protects everyone. This is one of the 10 topics of any great Purana, this protection of the Lord. And this Govardhan Hill pastime so wonderfully illustrates how Krishna protects his pure devotees. Whenever there's some time of distress, a forest fire or some demon, even though Krishna's just a little boy in Vrindavan, somehow everyone always turns to him for protection. He always, without fail, protects them in pleasing and playful ways, and they feel fearless because they know of Krishna's protection. These are some of the signs of a person who surrendered to Krishna, that They always expect the Lord's mercy and protection. They feel fearless. They feel completely surrendered to Him and dependent on His mercy. So, the other main instruction here that Prabhupada talks about in the purport is how we Vaishnavas, we don't have to worship the demigods. We don't pay too much attention to worshiping the demigods. I know at this time of year in Bengal, everybody worships Mother Durga, and they kill thousands of chickens. The streets are running with blood. It's kind of ghastly. But these kind of things are, the Vedas prescribe sacrifices for different demigods. The demigods are real. The demigods are divine. They're parts of Krishna's gigantic universal body. They're his agents. He's assigned them to do different important functions in the material universe. They're also, many of them are pure devotees. Some of them are conditioned souls that have achieved that purpose. Materialists sometimes desire to go to the planets of the demigods, and they perform various sacrifices, as described in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Yamimang Pushpitang Vachang Pravadantya Vipaschitaha. The Veda Vadaratas say there's nothing more than and the only purpose of life is to perform these sacrifices to achieve Bhogaishvarya, great opulence and material enjoyment. And but Krishna explains in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita that Trividyamang Somapa Putapapa Jagyayishvara Svargating Pratayante, that the people following the three Vedas, they drink the soma juice and they prepare and they get great opulence. Te punyama sadhya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bhogan. They get to taste the heavenly enjoyment that's available in the material world for those who are in the heavenly planets. And this is one of the purposes of Lord Krishna's creating the material universe. Two main purposes. One is to give those who are averse to his service or who want to experience independent enjoyment, to give them this simulacrum of real enjoyment, the false enjoyment of material heavenly delights and so forth. And he gives a way that people can pursue this pravritti marga, the path of material progress, without violating the rights of others, without violating dharma, by performing sacrifices to the different devas and by performing one's duties properly and ethically and morally. But another purpose is, higher purpose is, to give people the opportunity to realize that the real goal of life is to attain Krishna prema, like the devotees in the spiritual world, to be able to return to the spiritual world and stop having to suffer so-called material enjoyment, which is always mixed with suffering. So, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks Krishna, well, you know, you've already told me that it's best to be self-realized, so why do you want me to fight the war? Shouldn't I just sit and meditate? Krishna says that we have actions to perform, that some people are not qualified to sit like Haridas Thakur and chant Hare Krishna all day. And it's better for them, they need to purify their senses by engaging in proper behavior, proper activities. And he says, Saha yagya prajashushva purovacha prajapatim anena prasavishyadvam eshavos tushtakamaduk. That kamaduk is a saravi cow, a cow of plenty. That he says that this will be, that you perform, that God created generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for pleasing Vishnu. Actually, all the sacrifices, even the sacrifices for different demigods, are ultimately meant for realizing Krishna. Vedaischa sarvayaraham eva vedyo. And he explains in Bhagavad Gita that he is the enjoyer and the master of all sacrifices. And so the world is created in this, such a way that devan bhavayatani na te deva bhavayantu vaha parasparan bhavayanta. Shreyam Paravapsitah, that the demigods and the humans are engaged in this kind of interdependent relationship where the demigods depend more or less on receiving worship and sacrifice from the human beings for their happiness. And in exchange, their duty, they're providing the sunlight, the rain, the air, all the things that humans need, all the ingredients that humans need to live peacefully and happily in this material world. And so this is this proper arrangement or this cycle of sacrifice. Krishna later says, Evang pravartatang chakrang nanuvartayatihaya aghayor indriyaramo mogang parthasajivati. That one who, earlier he says that one who enjoys these gifts of the demigods without offering anything in return is actually a thief and subject to be punished. And so now he's saying this cycle of sacrifice is made so nicely but one who doesn't participate by performing sacrifice is living in vain. There's no profit to what they're doing if they're just doing it for themselves. Or as Bob Marley said, what is it? Live for yourself and you live in vain. Live for others and you live again. So we have to live in this system of sacrifice. In fact, even the food we eat, if we don't eat the remnants of sacrifice, Krishna says we're just eating actually sin. And there's reactions for that. The material world is set up in such a way that if we do things that transgress the laws of nature, then we have to suffer bad reactions. And if we do things in accordance with the proper laws as we're supposed to do, then we can make gradual progress. Although even on the royal roads, there are accidents, and therefore this process of karmakanda, of trying to do pious works to be elevated to the highest perfection, is a faulty path. And the best path is just to engage in devotional service to Krishna. And the best sacrifice for this age is Harinam Sankirtan. In this age of Kali, we're not capable of performing these great sacrifices. In previous ages, kings with great wealth would perform great sacrifices. Of course, the basic principle of sacrifice is you take some possessions and you offer them to God. The basic archetype is that you put grains mixed with clarified butter into a fire. And in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about different kinds of sacrifices, but he uses this metaphor that you're offering, like the impersonalists offer things into the fire of the supreme impersonal absolute truth. And the regulated householders are offering, with their regulated sense enjoyment, are offering things into the fire of their senses. The unadulterated brahmacharis are offering the activities of the senses into the fire of the controlled mind. And there's these different divisions of sacrifice, which are all meant for ultimately understanding that everything belongs to Krishna, that Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, that every living being is part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, we should never feel possessive about anything. The Isha Upanishad says that everything belongs to Krishna, Isha Vasyam, the whole world is Krishna's property, and that we shouldn't try to encroach on the property of others, but just accept our quota as servants of Krishna. The Isha Upanishad also says that those who worship that which is not supreme, that which is dependent, in other words, the demigods, remain in ignorance. And worse still are those who worship the impersonal absolute truth, which appears independent but is not a person. So this personal worship of demigods helps one to eventually realize that the ultimate absolute truth is a person, and we can achieve our highest result by surrendering to him. So in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about karma yoga, but by the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion is that we can abandon all dharmas and completely surrender to Krishna. This is the way of the Brijvasis. They're all completely surrendered to Krishna, and they're always extremely happy and delighted in serving Krishna. There's basically two regimes of ethical principles, you might say. One is the way karma works,
Good deeds are rewarded, bad deeds are punished. Everyone is awarded exactly according to their deeds. The outcomes, the happiness and distress that's accorded to them, the birth, the kind of body that's accorded to them. Yastvindra gopam, in Brahma Samhita, yastvindra gopam atavendra mahosva karma, bandhana rupa palabhajanam atunoti. And then karmani nirdahati kintu chabhakti bhajam, but for those who engage in devotional service, bhakti bhajam, then Krishna burns up to their very roots actions and reactions of karma. Govinda mari purushantam aham bhajami. So we should take to this process of devotional service, not to the practice of karma kanda. Of course, we should behave ethically. There's no reason for us to violate the general rules of morality and ethics. In fact, devotees, they follow the four regular principles. They're kind to everyone. They don't cause anyone unnecessary distress. Devotees act according, befitting their position in society. But the Srimad Bhagavatam expresses the higher principle that even if you somehow have to abandon your duties in material life, because we have duties also, it's not just that we don't bother anybody, but we have things to do. But even if we abandon those things to satisfy Krishna, then even if we fall down, we have nothing to fear, we haven't lost anything, Narada Muni teaches. But if we do everything perfectly, but we don't acquire this attraction to Krishna, then we've simply wasted our time. We haven't gained anything. The duties we have to perform, there's a pastime where Daksha was empowered to create generations of living beings in this world to keep the world going nicely. But Narada Muni came and preached to Daksha's sons. First there were 1,000, and he preached them, and they all became Paramahansas, and they didn't get married or have any children. They just went off to meditate, to go back to Godhead. And then 10,000 more sons, the Haryashvas, and same thing, Narada Muni, the preaching is there. He preaches in the Bhagavatam, it explains, and he preaches in this allegorical language, and they all go back to Godhead instead of doing what their father wanted them to do. So then sometimes it's found that people are susceptible to our proselytizing activities after they've suffered some distress. For example, King Chitraketu lost his son, and then Narada Muni came there and he was ready to become a devotee because he was feeling materially exhausted. So Narada Muni thought, let me go to Daksha. Maybe now, because his sons have gone and he's feeling distress, he'll be able to understand his Krishna consciousness. But Daksha was too angry and he chastised Narada Muni. Don't you know, everybody has duties to the ancestors, to the sages, to the demigods. We have to perform sacrifices for the demigods. We have to study the Vedas for the sages. And we have to create good progeny to satisfy the ancestors in our ancestral line. And these duties can't be avoided. And you're teaching people to avoid their duties. Sometimes people would chastise Prabhupada. You know, your devotees, what are they doing? They should be out making money. Why are they? What if everybody just chanted Hare Krishna? Who would build the roads? Who would build the cars? Who would, you know? So Narada Muni understood a higher principle, a more secret principle that the devotees understand, which is that if you're fully surrendered to Krishna, then you don't have to perform those other duties, that those duties are completely satisfied. Your ancestors, your sages, your demigods will actually be more pleased with you if you can please Krishna with devotional service. And the analogy is always given that if you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches will be satisfied. If you supply food to the stomach through proper eating, then the body completely will be nourished. If you try to satisfy it the other way, then you will just starve. So Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, I mean, worship of the demigods is authorized in the Vedas. And people in the mode of goodness worship the demigods, Krishna says in chapter 17. People in the mode of passion, In the mode of passion, worship demons. People in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and evil spirits. But nevertheless, Krishna says, worship me. Don't worship the demigods. Like Prabhupada was referring to the second canto, where all the different, there's descriptions, Shukadeva Goswami is describing all the different kinds of things you can achieve. If you want strength, you worship the earth, and if you want health, you worship the sun, and if you want, may not even be getting them right, but for opulence, worship Lakshmi Devi. There's so many demigods you worship for these material things, but a person of broader intelligence should just worship Krishna. Even if they want material things, they should worship Krishna. So Krishna explains that in the seventh chapter. He explains that even if you want to worship some demigod, Krishna is the one who provides the faith that allows you to perform the worship properly. But actually the results that you get by satisfying the demigod are really provided by Krishna. The demigod couldn't do anything without Krishna. So, but those material results are temporary, and they're limited. So Krishna says this is less intelligent, that those kamas taista hrita jnana prapadyante nara, kamas taista hrita anya devata, hrita jnana prapadyante anya devata, tang tang niyamam ashtaya prakrityanita swaya, that they worship other gods other than me because they're intelligence has been warped by their material desires. And but Krishna's explaining how he's actually the source of everything material and everything spiritual in the world, and that those who are intelligent know him to be the Adi Bhuta, the Adi Daiva, and the Adi Atma. That is, the demigods are Adi Daiva. They're in charge of they're higher. The higher powers, higher personalities who control the higher, the universe, who control greater things. Ourself, our body, our mind, not so much our body, but our mind and senses, the conscious living being is Adiatma, the self. And the things of the world, including material bodies and material objects, the things physicists and materialists study, that's the adibodhic. That's the physical objects. So materialists, they think that everything is just made out of these inert, unconscious physical objects, and they don't understand. Actually, I was reading about Govardhan Leela on the internet, and some fool was saying, because when Krishna talked Nanda Maharaj into not worshiping Indra, he used this karma mimamsa argument. That, well, you know, if we don't perform our work, the demigods can't give us anything anyway, so we don't have to worship the demigods. They have to supply us with, if we do our work correctly, so let's just work. So I was reading some fool was, atheistic fool, who was posing himself as an authority on Srimad Bhagavatam, was saying, what Krishna teaches is we should just concern ourselves with work in the world and not worship anyone. Just, just achieve this. So the materialists are something like that. The physicalists, materialists, they don't understand that there's this adidaivic principle, that without which our senses couldn't even perceive the sense objects without the different demigods and their interaction. But Krishna is above all that, and so Krishna is the ultimate daivic factor. There's five factors of every action. There's the place of action, there's the performer, the different endeavors, the instruments of action. But ultimately, the sanctioning factor is the super soul, the supreme daivic principle, without whose sanction nothing can happen. So sacrifice is necessary, but the purpose of sacrifice is always to please Krishna. The purpose of the Vedic system of sacrifices is really to bring people ultimately to the conclusion that there are persons, higher persons in the world, and to ultimately bring people to the conclusion of broader intelligence that there's a highest person, a supreme person, and we should worship and surrender to him, and we're completely dependent on him, and everything is not different from him. Because like we read this morning from the Brahma Samhita, there's no difference between the possessor and the potency and the possessor of the potency. There is a difference. The potency is always dependent on the possessor, but at the same time, the possessor and the potency are acting one. This is a problem with the Abrahamic religions. They focus so much on monotheism that they don't really understand the nature of God's energies and how God's working through his different agents and his energies. Of course, Vaishnavism is also a monotheistic religion. They will say, no, but you have so many different gods and things like that. But these gods are really just extensions of Krishna. He does things through his agents, just like if you're a big CEO of a big corporation, you have to delegate things. Krishna doesn't have to delegate, but actually he's only really interested in pure bhakti with the inhabitants of Vrindavan. That's his real main business. And he's not very attracted to the prayers of materialists who just want him to give him money, give me health, protect my, you know. He's not very interested in the materialistic people because they're forgetting him. He's actually, as they surrender to him, he rewards them accordingly. He's the dearmost friend of everyone. It's not that he's aloof, really. He wants them to come back to him. But because they want to forget him, he puts them in the charge of these different devas and puts them in the charge of material nature. But he's sending his devotees, he's sending his scriptures, he's always trying to remind them how they can come back to him in different ways. So the Sankirtan for this age, the Yajna for this age is Harinam Sankirtan. Lord Chaitanya has come and given us this holy name, this very powerful, very easy method of achieving the perfection of yoga and achieving the goal of life of Krishna Prema. We should all take it by chanting Hare Krishna, Hari Bol. Now we have some time for discussion and questions.
Very, very nice, very nicely explained. The system of Parvati Marga was established here by the demigods because they're engaging in universal affairs. They get some reward, and you touch upon that really, you know. So that was Parvati Marga. But the Lord Krishna had established that before you worship the demigods, at least the fourth offering comes to me, you see, and then, you know, I mean, to appease the demigods, they get something. Yeah, that's a little comment. My question, I mean, cow protection also should not really be underestimated, especially if we got to carry on this movement for some time. We can see the degradation already, how much cows are being slaughtered. But I often heard that some of the cows, they're not coming from the Surab, and as such, well, they're allowed to be slaughtered by the other thing.
It's a nonsense philosophy. First, we shouldn't kill any animals, but especially cows that give us milk are our mothers. So some people say, when I was on Sankirtan in the prairies of Canada, we stayed at the house of one man. He's become an initiated devotee now. He was an economics professor, and he was saying, but if you live in Canada, you have to drink liquor, you have to eat meat. And he was saying, only the cows in India, they're sacred. But the cows here, they're a different kind of cows. They're not sacred. You can kill them. I think he was saying something like that. I hope I'm not blaspheming him. And I hope he please forgives me if he hears me say this. But of course, we shouldn't kill any living beings, and especially cows. Krishna's cows are very dear to Krishna, and cows are one of our mothers. And even whether it's an Indian cow, or it's a Holstein, or a Jersey, or a Guernsey, it's still our mother, and it's still dear to Krishna. These cows are still dear to Krishna, and the cows are so nice. They're not ferocious animals that do anyone harm. They give so much milk that they can feed their own calves and also feed human society.
And milk is an important ingredient in the human diet. It helps create finer tissues in our body that help us understand devotional service. So no, all cows are dear to Krishna. I got Mika.
That was a wonderful class. Whole presentation. Very good. Thank you.
I'm hoping that I can serve the devotees of Krishna who love to hear about his glories.
Go on reciting. I think it's, if this is accurate, all the demigods reside in the urinary tract of the cow. So the urine is such a potent remedy for many ailments in Ayurveda.
Yeah, it's good to know. Yes, I've heard that. Different parts of the cow, except the mouth, I understand, is not pure or something like that. Cow, all the different parts. And of course, cow manure is a very useful substance that people can clean with, you can cook with, use as fuel. People can actually even build with using those parts. Yeah. Something else? Jai, Hare Krishna.
I'm just wondering, what kind of result do those worshippers of Kali that you mentioned in India get by, you know, slaughtering the chickens and presenting them to the demigod? Like, what do they get from that?
Well, we shouldn't denigrate any of the demigods. Mumukshuvo ghora rupan hitva bhuta patinata narayana kalakshanta bhajanti hyanusuyuvaha. So this verse in the second chapter of the first canto says that even the ghastly forms of demigods like Kali, who has a, you know, big red tongue and she's drinking blood and cutting people's heads off and stuff like that, she's actually teaching. She, just like Krishna is curbing down the pride of Indra, so she has the thankless task of smashing all everyone's attempts for material enjoyment. Durga, or Ambika, she's the mother of the universe, so she's the material nature personified, so they're worshiping her for opulence. They may get it, actually. The the 80... I don't remember which chapter, one of the later chapters of the 10th canto, there's the question being asked, how come the devotees of Lord Shiva get opulence and the devotees of Lord Vishnu suffer poverty? But actually the devotees of Vishnu don't suffer poverty. What they're, Krishna's giving them what they need to become really perfect in devotional service so they can have the highest good fortune. But the demigods, like Durga and Shiva, Brahma, sometimes they award things to even to demons. They're not so careful. Okay, don't bother me. You're performing these austerities to satisfy me. Okay, like there was the one demon, Vrikashura was his name. He was actually cutting off parts of his body and putting them in the fire to worship Lord Shiva. And finally, just when he was going to cut his own head off, Lord Shiva said, okay, what do you want? And he said, I want the power that I can, anyone I touch their head will crack and they'll die, and I can just kill anybody by going around touching their heads. So Lord Shiva actually gave him that power because demigods are not as careful in giving benedictions. So that's why materialists like to worship them. They think I can get what I want, not what I need. What we really need is to become pure devotees. So in that case, the demon really wanted to marry Parvati himself. If by killing Shiva, then he would take Parvati away. That was his idea, some crazy Diwani idea. So he was chasing Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva had given him the benediction, so he had to run away. He couldn't counteract the benediction. He was running away to prevent himself from being touched in the head. But then Vishnu came and saved him in the form of a beautiful little brahmachari with a deer skin on, and he came and he said, what are you doing? Why, you know, to the, he said to the demon, why are you doing this? And he was so charming and beautiful, the demon stopped to talk to him and said, well, I've got the power. I can touch anybody, and I'm going to kill Lord Shiva, and I'm going to marry Parvati. And he said, oh, who told you that you could do that? Oh, Shiva, he gave me the benediction. Oh, that Shiva, he's always giving benedictions. They're not really, he's just fooled you. It's not really going to work. Look, touch your own head. You can see it won't work. So he touched his head, believing Vishnu, and then he died. So Vishnu saved him from that demon. But we shouldn't denigrate the demigods, and they're doing important things, and Durga killed a very important demon. In fact, Krishna comes, when he comes and shows his how he takes care of his devotees, that's a special feature of why he comes. He can, other times, there are other demons, he just sends demigods to kill them, or different agents. He has so much power, he doesn't have to personally get involved. But he personally gets involved to show how those of his pure devotees, how he protects them, and especially how the residents of Vrindavan, how he has this loving exchanges with them so very much. And whatever they're doing, killing all the chickens, I don't know, but they're not going to get pure love of Krishna that way.
It just seems like
they're going to
get a sinful reaction.
Yeah. Well, if they're doing it in accordance with proper Vedic rituals and stuff, they wouldn't. But nowadays in Kali Yuga, people don't know how to do the sacrifices properly. And even those who did know, like King Prachinabharishat, in the fourth canto, Narada Muni comes and he preaches to this son of Manu. And he shows him in the sky, there's all these animals with horns and teeth. And he says, you know, these are the animals that you killed in your proper Vedic sacrifice, doing proper good karmakanda. You're killing all these animals. And he said, now they get to take revenge on you and they're going to come and kill you. So he told him, don't bother with this karmakanda. Take up devotional service. And one more thing over here.
Animal sacrifices done properly, the animals go to the heavenly plane. They get
that.
No doubt, that was explained in some part of the Mahabharata.
And Prabhupada often explains
that's
that.
That's not recommended for this age.
Yeah, it can't be done in this age. The Brahmins don't have the powers. But in the olden times, they would light the fire just by mantra. And when they would bring the sacrificial animal, an older horse or an older cow, and they would offer the sacrifice, and then a younger animal would come out. They would give it a new rejuvenated body by killing the older animal, and they would give the same soul a rejuvenated body, just as part of the sacrifice. I don't know a lot about these Vedic sacrifices, but it was part of the sacrifice to show the efficacy of the mantras and the power, the proper power of the Brahmins. They would invite the Devas to come and partake of the prasadam of Vishnu in these sacrifices. And the kings would supply not only grains and butter and burn things up, but they would supply clothing and cows and wealth, and they would give in great charity to the Brahmins, but that everyone would come to take prasadam. So even the lowest members of society would be able to have their needs fulfilled. It's the duty of a king to take care of the entire praja. And praja just doesn't mean the human citizens, but it means all the animals and the birds and trees and everything in the kingdom. The duty of the king is to actually, within that kingdom, to properly take care of everyone. So that's, those previous sacrifices were like that. Jagarini, my better half, who always reminds me, keeps me humble, reminds me of my faults, like so that I don't become like King Indra puffed up.
I was just thinking, one day I went to, Hetta Karna really likes Lord Shiva, so she came to visit us, and I didn't even know this, but when we were living up in Oakland, there's a Shiva temple, quite a large one, really close to where we were living. It was about 15 minutes away. She asked me to come with her, and I went with her. And they were having a special puja that day. It was some special day. I don't know exactly what it was. And the pujari was, we got there early, the pujari's on the altar dressing the deities in full view of everyone. Now, you know, of course, we have our standards, and ISKCON Prabhupada gave us these very high, wonderful standards in deity worship. But I'm watching, and the pujari is actually dressing the deity while he's on his cell phone talking to somebody.
And no joke, he's like, you know, oh, like, you know, animated on the phone, speaking to someone and decorating the deity. And I was just thinking about how traditions, Vedic, so-called Vedic traditions, have diminished to that extent. I think that I believe what I've read in the past, Durga worship or Kali worship, it was supposed to prevent enemies, to get back at your enemies. It was a solution to rectify any evil coming upon you. So, you know, the Italians would wear garlic, you know, around their neck, or, you know, different superstitions. And I think that a lot of the Vedic sacrifices, if they're still trying to do them, have kind of devolved to that. I mean, even Srila Prabhupada, when he came, he just completely cleared it all up for us. You know, he set things straight in such a simple, easy way to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the topmost, you know? And it's just amazing, the past times and every time you hear about things.
Yeah.
That blew my mind when I was at that Shiva temple.
The Vedas are very vast and they cover all kinds of knowledge, and the Atharva Veda actually contains spells and love potions and, you know, all these kinds of things, you know. But the ultimate goal of the Vedas is to understand pure devotional service. You had something?
Yeah. Hare Krishna. Thanks, Guru. I went home and came back, but I was listening the whole time. But I was thinking how worship of the demigods, if it's for advancing in Krishna consciousness, like in Vrindavan, Gopeshwar Mahadev is worshipped, that because he's guarding the rasa arena, and his duty is don't let anybody in that's not qualified. So when devotees approach him or her, and they're asking, please let me be qualified. Or when the gopis were worshiping the goddess Kachayani, it was because they wanted Krishna as their husband, so that wasn't wrong. And then I was remembering too, when devotees first heard that, oh, Ganesh can bring opulence, they wrote to Srila Prabhupada and asked, can I worship Ganesh? He said, yes, if you give me $100,000 every day. Otherwise, no.
Yeah, I actually had in my outline a whole lot of other things to talk about. And one of them was like, why are the Brijbasis worshiping Indra anyway? And why do they worship demigods? And what, you know, I had several suggestions or questions. But one is that it would interfere with their rasa to just worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They love Krishna in an intimate way. So the gopis go to Goddess Katyayani to get Krishna as their husband, rather than think of Krishna, your God, you can give, you know, they don't want to see God as their order supplier. They want to please Krishna and just make him happy, and they want to. So, why are they doing that? I mean, Krishna arranges this to show the path to common people. Of course, they show the path also that they gave up the sacrifice to Indra. So so to participate in this pastime also, this arrangement is there. But yeah, in Vrindavan, they don't think of Krishna as God. In Vaikuntha, everyone knows that Krishna is the supreme controller, but they don't have that such an intimate, sweet experience as in Vrindavan. Okay, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Govardhan Leela Ki Jai.